From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Making room for Ronaldo, bailing on Bruno, and are Arsenal still a no-go? All that and more on the official FPL podcast. Well, hello, listener. I hope you're feeling refreshed and ready for the return of Premier League football after the first international break of the season. We are here again this week to ensure your FPL teams are packed to the core with potential points as game week 4 is now just days away. Joining me, Kelly Summers, this week, it's football journalist Lars Sivertsen. Hi, Lars.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. Looking forward to the return of the Premier League. We've got FPL family's Sam Bonfield back with us.
Hi, Kelly.
Hello, happy Sam Bonfield, I should say, because of course Spurs are top of the league. And football journalist and the birthday boy, Tom Williams. Tom, what a way to spend your birthday.
Hi, Kelly. Yeah, I honestly couldn't pick a better way to start the day than being here with you guys, chatting FPL, looking ahead to the weekend. I mean, you know, stuff that dreams are made of. It's downhill from here, I'm sure.
Well, hopefully you'll be celebrating with plenty of points this weekend. That's the birthday present you really want, isn't it? Anyway, okay, so we've had almost 2 weeks to sort out our teams and 700,000 managers, as it stands, I'm sure many more as well, have activated their wildcards. So how are we all feeling about that chip, Sam?
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it? Because for me, I was adamant I wasn't going to play my wildcard in game week 4. I was going to hold it. I wasn't going to get caught up in the hype. But then there's been some kind of key injuries or potentially key injuries over the international break. And suddenly I'm looking at Son sitting there in my midfield, who was an absolute must have for game week 4 a couple of days ago, thinking, are you going to be fit? And if he's not, then I can see that button getting played very, very late on Friday after the press conference news.
That's the worst, isn't it? When you know you might have to use it and then you're like, oh no, I've got to write off my whole Friday night to sort out my team. But yeah, as part of the FPL family, I kind of get the feeling that that's what Lee and you have to do quite a lot. Anyway, the big talking point ahead of this game week is, of course, that man, Cristiano Ronaldo's return. We'll talk in a little bit more detail about him and United's fixture this weekend very shortly. But Tom, is he essential for this week? And if you don't have him, what premiums do you have?
Ordinarily, with a new signing like this, albeit a player rejoining a club where he's had lots of success in the past, I would always say, just take your time. See how quickly he settles. Is he going to start? Is he going to be on the bench? There's no rush. Caution, caution, caution. That's always the watchword for me in FPL. But with Ronaldo, it's different. He is a goal machine. He's one of the greatest goal scorers in the history of football. Even from a psychological perspective, the thought of going into this FPL weekend without having Ronaldo in my team brings me out in a cold sweat. I am going to be bringing him in, and I may wait for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's pre-match press conference. If there's any indication that he's not going to start, then perhaps I will act with a bit more caution. But he should be a points magnet, and I can completely understand, you know, people sort of tearing up their teams and starting again just to get him in, because he, you know, If his previous FPL stint tells anything, it's that he is guaranteed a points bonanza every week, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the fear with not having Ronaldo, that we'll miss out on points, because it does feel like everyone in the FPL community is getting on him. But it feels like there's a number of players that if we don't have them now with these premiums, we could miss out on big points, Lars. I'm talking about Romelu Lukaku as well, Mo Salah, Bruno, Harry Kane as well, who it feels like we haven't even spoken about too much.
Yeah, I suspect I am in a situation now that quite a lot of FPL managers are in the sense that I have two of the premium midfielders. So I've got Salah and Fernandes, and I'm probably going to turn one of them into one of these three, I suppose. You can all put them in the same category, they're premium strikers. And I'm going to go slightly rogue and say I'm edging towards Lukaku presently. I take all you say on board, Tom, about him being a proven goal scorer, Ronaldo, that he scored goals wherever he's gone. He's a phenomenal player, all of this. But I'm genuinely curious about how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer sets up this team. There's almost been like an assumption that he's a number nine now. He's going to play up front. He's a number nine. But he has been that sort of penalty box predator for a little while now. But actually, at Juventus, he would often play as part of a strike partnership, as one of the two, or coming in from the left. And if he's going to do that, like, I don't see United playing with two out-and-out strikers, and he's playing from the left, it means moving Pogba around, and we know how problematic that's been in the past. And honestly, I don't really know what this team is going to look like, so I understand the sort of breaking out in cold sweat, and there's a huge chance of the Newcastle game being settled by like a crashing header from Ronaldo. Like, we can all see that in our mind's eye when we close our eyes, and I understand the fear, but I might actually brave it. I'm going to sit bravely on the fence on him, I think, actually, initially.
The voice of reason speaks.
The last time Ronaldo was in the Premier League, though, in the last three seasons, he managed to average 7.3 FPL points per match. So if he continues and starts again in that fame, then could be on for a really good season. I think not having him against Newcastle, like, those United fans are going to go absolutely bonkers. That Newcastle game is prime for Ronaldo, Ronaldo, Ronaldo every 5 minutes, isn't it?
That is over 10 years ago, though. I mean, it's worth saying. I know that sort of we're all hyped about Ronaldo coming back, I suppose. But, I mean, he is a slightly different player now. Not a bad player by any means, but a slightly different one. And I mean, looking at his numbers for last season, yes, his sort of XG per 90 was slightly higher than Lukaku's, but he contributed 11. Lukaku had 11 assists, whereas Ronaldo had two. So, I don't know. Lukaku for a million cheaper. He plays for a team who I think is quite a lot better. I might have quite like a full pack of eggs on my face come Monday. That is entirely possible. But I'm not fully sold on the Ronaldo hype train just yet.
So plenty to think about when it comes to Ronaldo and some of the big price to players. But we do also need to mention what's going on with some of the Brazilian international Premier League players. There are reports that some of them might be missing this weekend due to a FIFA ban, but nothing is official yet and talks are ongoing. So as always, keep an eye on fantasy.premierleague.com for all the latest news. And don't do anything too rash. Now, we've already had a bit of a debate, I should say, about who's the better option out of Ronaldo and Lukaku. I tell you what, let's continue that debate by looking ahead to the key fixtures in Game Week 4. So Game Week 4 kicks off at 12:30 on Saturday with Crystal Palace versus top of the league Spurs. That one's for you, Sam. That does mean the deadline is 90 minutes before, so 11 a.m. UK time. Do not miss it. There are then 6:3 p.m. kickoffs, including, of course, Manchester United versus Newcastle. Chelsea versus Villa is the late game. Then there's just the one Sunday game this week, Leeds-Liverpool, before Game Week 4 concludes with Everton versus Burnley on Monday. Now, there really is only one place to start. We've already had a bit of a heated debate in part one of the podcast. But does Cristiano Ronaldo start in Manchester United versus Newcastle, Lars?
I mean, I feel like there's a chance he doesn't. I feel like there's a chance he hasn't. I mean, he hasn't had a lot of time to train with the team. And you can also think of just a sense of drama, the sense of occasion, if he gets subbed on in the second half with like all of Old Trafford going completely wild. And it is a game where if they were playing one of the top teams, then probably you just throw him on and, you know. But they're playing a team they should kind of be beaten comfortably anyway. And if Newcastle are stubborn, then you have that option of bringing him on for his big homecoming off the bench. I'm not, based on what we know right now, which isn't everything because we haven't had all the press conferences and all that, I feel like it isn't 100%.
See, I totally disagree. I just don't see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer not playing Ronaldo from the start of that game. Maybe if it was an away game, I might feel differently. But against the Old Trafford faithful, or in front of the Old Trafford faithful, rather, I can see him starting. Plus, he came early from international duty. So he's been training with the Manchester United squad because of his yellow card that he picked up for Portugal. I just think that this game week is absolutely primed for him to do well. And the fixtures after that aren't so great necessarily. So if you are looking to invest in Ronaldo, I think you have to do it for game week 4.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably side more with Sam than with Lars on this one. Although I would say we all think that this is going to be a triumphant return for Ronaldo and he's going to score a hat trick and be sort of cheered from the field by his jubilant teammates. And, you know, United will break every record on social media for in-game engagement. But there is also a possibility that United go into this game a little bit undercooked because they've got players coming back from the international break. And the expectation of the whole stadium and every Man United fan that they're going to see a Cristiano Ronaldo goal just weighs on the match. And maybe he does score one goal, but, you know, it's not going to be, a one-man show. My feeling is just that at some point, I'm sure we're all going to end up with Ronaldo in our teams. This is a very appealing fixture for him to start off with. As Sam says, he's had a full week of training because of his early return from international duty with Portugal after that stealthily accumulated yellow card late on against Ireland. So, yeah, he's going in for me, no question.
So I want to add, having been sort of outvoted here to our dear listeners, that I have
don't
to
back
admit,
down, Lars.
I do accept the logic of the arguments that have been put forward, and I will concede that some of my hesitancy about Ronaldo straight from the off in this game week is kind of based on sort of a gut instinct and sort of feeling bad vibes and that, this sort of thing, rather than cold, hard logic. So if you're going to, you know, if you're not sure what to do, maybe you're better off following the other panelists. I just want to note it for the record that I'm not quite convinced.
Tom, I think that's your first birthday present of the day. You've just defeated Lars there. You've made him back down. Of course, to get Ronaldo in, it does mean that we have to shift funds around, as we've been talking about. And Bruno Fernandes is the most sold player, with over 750,000 managers moving him on. That
and
feels
rightly
like
so.
A bold move, Sam.
Oh, rightly so, Lars. Goodness me. See, for me, at no point in a season would I ever sell Bruno Fernandes ahead of a game against Newcastle. I appreciate all the rhetoric around, you know, the fact that in Portugal, it's not Bruno that's on penalties, it's not Bruno that's on the majority of the set pieces, it's Ronaldo. But we haven't had definite confirmation from Manchester United that they're going to suddenly take all of these things away from Bruno. We haven't heard for sure that Ronaldo's on all of them, and Bruno's done a really good job, let's not forget, on penalties for Manchester United over the last, well, since he's arrived at the club. So I don't think that Ronaldo arrival automatically makes Bruno Fernandes a bad option, and that's the one thing that puts me off doing the Bruno to Ronaldo move. It feels very knee-jerk to do that, and I worry slightly that I could be throwing Bruno away at a point where he might just do as well as Ronaldo does in this game. I do appreciate, though, that he has blanked in 9 of the last 15 Premier League games. The consistency is dropping off for Bruno, and eventually I can see myself doing it. But I kind of want to see Ronaldo taking all the free kicks and Ronaldo taking the penalties before I get rid of Bruno.
I'm sure we'll be seeing that very, very soon, Sam.
I'm sure we probably will.
It's a classic FPL conundrum, isn't it? Because, I mean, Fernandes to Ronaldo makes all the sense in the world. You know, you don't want to double up on the two big-ticket players at the same club. And, you know, in terms of funds, it's quite a straightforward operation to enact. But at the same time, as Sam says, going into a Newcastle home game, you can see Bruno Fernandes racking up a lot of points this weekend. So it could be one that people, you know, might have cause to regret in the short term, but I suspect long term that Fernandes to Ronaldo move will make a lot of sense.
What about the impact on the other players as well as Bruno then? Because Paul Pogba's had a brilliant start to the season, 5 assists. He's, of course, been playing on the left. And also the impact it might have on the other players that could service Cristiano Ronaldo, potentially the likes of Luke Shaw. How do you see those players being affected, Sam?
So I think when you're looking at the rest of the team, the fact that Dan James was in there for their last fixture and now isn't means that there is kind of a space in that starting 11 that he can slot into. The impact that it has on Greenwood kind of interests me, because at first I thought, well, maybe Greenwood's going to be a bit of a sacrifice. But from what Ollie's saying, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he's likely to try and play them both kind of up top together. And that's actually been historically where Ronaldo's been better, when there's been somebody there with him. But I do think that there's going to be a price to pay for either Pogba or Bruno. And that's where I still need to see Manchester United play with him to work this out, because one of them is likely to have to play a bit deeper in order for Ronaldo to take that forward spot. So it could be Pogba, it could be Bruno, but we just don't really know yet.
And of course, Cristiano Ronaldo is the most expensive at 12.5 million in just over 17% of teams at the time of recording. Now, moving on, of course, that is not the only fixture this weekend. Which other one is standing out to you then, Sam?
So I actually really like the look of the Villa-Chelsea game. Going into this weekend, a lot of the rhetoric in the early part of the season was that you buy your Villa assets, you enjoy owning them for the first 3 game weeks, and then you sell them. But actually, things haven't been as bad as they maybe look on paper for Villa, and I think there's more of a talking point to be had as to whether we automatically get rid of them. Villa have had 28 attempts so far this season. That's the third worst across the division. So if you're talking about getting Chelsea players, then actually the attacking ones look good. But their goal conversion rate is the second best in the league. Ings has so far managed 2 goals and an assist and returned against 3 of the big 6 last season, including Chelsea. If, as it looks like he might, he plays alongside Ollie Watkins for the first time, Watkins likewise scored against 3 of the big 6 last season. So they are players that do kind of stand up, and they're going to need to without Martinez in goal behind them. I think Aston Villa players are going to go and try and attack. Of course, Chelsea are going to be missing Reece James this week because he is now suspended following his red card against Liverpool in game week 3. So I think when it comes to Villa, we should be kind of maybe just keeping an eye on what's happening there, particularly with their forward players. They haven't been the most prolific so far to start the season, but their record is better against the big 6.
Yeah, that's all fair enough. What I would interject is that I really rate Chelsea from what I've seen so far this season. I know it's just 3 games.
You're not
games
the only
in,
one, Lars.
But really, I'm very close to just thinking they're probably the best team in the league at the moment. I rate them very, very highly. The thing that's really putting a spanner in the works for me this week is this slight injury niggle possibility with Lukaku, which is why I don't really know what I'm doing with my subs until, I mean, I'm desperately hoping we'll get some sort of hints from the press conferences, because that makes it very comfortable, because my sort of slightly irrational Ronaldo hesitancy, the obvious move for me is to make that shift to Lukaku already now, instead of game week 7, which I'm guessing everyone is planning on doing, just because I think Chelsea are really, really good. And I take your points about Villa on board, but I just think Chelsea are a much better football team.
I mean, Chelsea are a tricky one from an FPL perspective in that they're clearly one of, if not the best team in the country. But it's quite hard to know which players you can trust from an FPL perspective, because there is only 4 or 5 players who are guaranteed starters every week. And there are some really attractive Chelsea, because you look at someone like Marcos Alonso, who's made a fantastic start to the season. But now that Ben Chilwell is picking up fitness, is Alonso's play still guaranteed? On the other side, you've got Azpilicueta, you've got Reece James. They've got options at centre-back. They've got so many options in those attacking midfield positions. I don't currently have any Chelsea players. I'm planning to bring in Lukaku in game week 7. And that sort of uncertainty about who's going to start means that I think you should proceed with caution when it comes to looking at bringing in Chelsea players.
It does feel like a bit of a minefield when it comes to Chelsea. That's what happens maybe when you have too many good players in your squad. Now, Tom, what about you? When you're looking at the fixtures, which one is standing out for you, and in terms of potential points for your team or points you're worried about not having?
So I thought I'd talk about Leeds-Liverpool, as I have 4 players involved in this fixture. I say involved. One of those is Tsimikas, who is currently on my bench. Another of those 4 players is Luke Ayling, who is also on my bench, although given that absolute screamer he scored at Old Trafford, I worry that he has unexpectedly developed a taste for scoring against grand clubs from the English Northwest, and that I may regret benching him. But my 2 starting players are Mo Salah and Rafinha. Mo Salah obviously made a fantastic start to the season. We all know what a reliable source of points he is in FPL. He's the 2nd top scorer in the game currently behind Mikel Antonio. 13 goal attempts this season, which puts him top in that category for midfielders. Also scored a hat-trick against Leeds last season. And we know that Leeds are a team that allow their opponents opportunities. So I can see Mo Salah getting on the score sheet again here. Diogo Jota is not a player who I own. I've been wary about him given the competition from Roberto Firmino and the fact that, you know, you don't know that he is guaranteed to start each week. But Firmino is a doubt for this fixture, limped off in that game against Chelsea before the international break with a hamstring injury. And obviously, if he's out, Jota is the obvious replacement. And at 7.6 million, and with two goals to his name already, you know, Jota is a nice cut price route into this team. Trent Alexander-Arnold, fantastic start to the season, has sort of picked up where he left off last season. Don't need to say much about him. From a Leeds perspective, I've got Rafinha. I absolutely love Rafinha as a footballer. And I think even when it comes to games against the big teams, he's worth persevering with because he creates things out of nothing. You look at his three games so far this season, he scored a lovely goal against Everton. He didn't return against Man United and Burnley, but in both of those games, he passed up on really presentable chances. So you could say, well, if he's getting in those positions, why isn't he scoring? But I'm more of a glass half full kind of guy. I think the fact he's getting into those positions shows that he is a reliable goal threat. So even though I would expect Liverpool to win this one, I think it's always worth having Rafinha in your team, because even if Leeds are getting an absolute battering, he has the ability to just pull something out of the bag from nowhere.
And Sam, Liverpool could also be without Alisson, and there's talk that potentially Andy Robertson might not start this one as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of rhetoric in the press about how obviously Robertson is just coming back from injury and has played a lot of minutes over the international break with Scotland, and maybe Tsimikas starts in this game. But as you rightly say, if we don't see Alisson, I've got the double up in the Liverpool defence still in my team currently with Tsimikas and Trent. And if they're both going to start, I'd want to play them. But without Alisson there, that could potentially throw up a bit of an upset, and it will certainly encourage the Leeds side to be more attacking, that's for sure. So it is a bit of a dilemma as to what to do with the Liverpool defence this time. But Salah, I think, is a good captaincy option for this week. This is a game that he's going to really enjoy playing.
Yeah, still priced at 12.5 million and proof that managers are still very much on board the Mo Salah hype train, owned by over 53% of managers still. Two goals and two assists for him so far, and he's priced at 12.5 million. Of course, that's just three of the fixtures that we're looking at in depth this week, but there does look like there's some really fascinating matchups in FPL terms. Mikel Antonio has been standout performer, still the top scorer in FPL so far this season. West Ham travel to Southampton. Is he someone we still have to have in our team, Tom?
Yeah, I think so. My one great regret in FPL so far this season has been not having Antonio in from the start. And before game week one, I had a clear choice, Antonio or Callum Wilson. And my gut was telling me Antonio. West Ham are a significantly better team than Newcastle. He had a good season last season. He's fully fit. He's going to explode. But then I sort of looked at the numbers. And actually, last season, Callum Wilson had much better minutes per goal ratio than Antonio, significantly better points per game than Antonio in FPL. And something I'm trying to do this season is sort of ignore those kind of, gut instincts and trust in the numbers more. So I did that and it backfired completely. I think given the form that Antonio's in, the sense of momentum there is at West Ham at the moment, I think Antonio is a must-have, and I can see him getting on the score sheet again at Southampton this weekend.
I would add very briefly that I also think Southampton are a good tactical matchup for West Ham. You know, Southampton under Hasenhüttl, they like to press high, try to win the ball high up the field. But, you know, David Moyes is West Ham, very comfortable sitting in a low block. If I recall correctly, they scored more goals on the counter than anyone in the Premier League last season. And they're still playing in very much the same way. So I think that should be a really good matchup for Antonio. And yeah, if you don't have him already, you should look at a way of getting him in.
Yeah, and quickly a word on Leicester versus Manchester City as well. This one for me is really fascinating from an FPL point of view. Firstly, let's talk about Ferran Torres, because he's had 18 starts and he's been subbed on 9 times. But it does look like, Sam, he is Pep Guardiola's first choice kind of striker or player to play in that striker role. Is he someone that's appealing to you?
Oh, 100%. He is one of those players that I think at the beginning of the season we were all a little bit cautious about, because of course Manchester City were in for Harry Kane. They were trying to get themselves a forward, and that would have affected what we'd seen from Torres. Without a recognised striker in their team, he's going to play in the false nine as we've seen in the opening 3 game weeks of the season. And he's been putting away some really good numbers from there. His XG is 1.62 at the moment, 9 goal attempts, 3 big chances, scored 2 of them, getting in all the right places. And with the creativity that he has around him in that Manchester City team, things can only improve for him as he gets kind of KDB back and Foden back. And we're expecting to see them on the bench this weekend. So as that side becomes more creative around Torres, surely that only means more opportunities for him to score goals.
My one worry with Ferran Torres is the Pep roulette. And from an FPL perspective, the appeal of Ferran Torres is clear. Only 7.1 FPL million. And if he holds down the place as Man City's number nine, which is basically what he's been doing since the start of the season, I think he's a must-have. Because he's so advantageously priced, it helps you free up money for bringing in Ronaldo, Lukaku, etc. At the same time, I would not be surprised to see him drop in and out of the team. We've got Kevin De Bruyne on his way back. We've got Phil Foden on his way back. Quite often last season, De Bruyne played as the false nine. So my feeling with Torres is that I'm still holding back. I've currently got Jack Grealish, so I've already got a Man City midfielder. I don't want to double up. I think Grealish to Torres at some point may make sense, but I'd like to see a little bit more evidence that Torres is going to be the go-to man, the nailed-on starter as City's main frontline striker before I commit to that move.
I understand your hesitancy if you've got Grealish as well, Tom. I think, not doubling up, that makes sense. But aside from that, I just think the upside is so huge here. Even if there is a risk of him getting benched, there is. But you have a guy who's priced at 7-1, who looks like he might be playing, if there's a decent chance that he's playing as the focal point, the central
decent
striker.
Decent chance isn't enough in FPL. Lars, I want 100% confirmation.
I think at that price, because that opens up so many options for you elsewhere, and you can make sure that the first man off your bench is like not a disaster. I mean, that would be my caveat, but I just think if you have a guy who's 7-1 and there's a really good chance he starts as the striker for the best attacking team in the country, I think you should have him.
Well, that is this week covered off probably the longest fixture section we have ever done on this podcast, which I think just shows what a brilliant game week 4 we've got coming up for us. Next up, though, it is time for us to look further ahead in the long view. A reminder then, listener, that the long view is us looking a little bit further into the distance fixture-wise using the fixture difficulty ranking, which is also available for you guys to check out as well at fantasy.premierleague.com. Now, regular listeners will know that we've started this section of the podcast in recent weeks talking about Wolves, saying surely they've got to come good soon. Alas, still no goals, no points. But these fixtures, Watford, Brentford, Southampton, Newcastle next. If we are looking at Wolves, which Wolves players should we be looking at, Sam?
For me, it's all of them. I think this is the time to go all in on Wolves. You can go defensively with them because there's some really nice underlying stats coming out of the defence. When we have a little look at them as a team across the opening three game weeks of the season, they've only conceded 27 shots, 20 of those from inside the box, and only 3 big chances conceded in the first 3 game weeks. That's the third best across the division. And then when we look at them going forward, they've also been the third most creative side. They've had 57 attempts on goal, and only Liverpool and Man City have managed more than them. The underlying stats look brilliant, and we have to remember that they only lost game week 2 and game week 3 to a penalty from Dele Alli and an absolute worldie from Mason Greenwood. So they're unlucky not to have registered FPL points, and they're unlucky not to have registered Premier League points so far. So I'm really all aboard this. And for me, it's Saez who's really appealing. He has had 3 goal attempts so far this season, 1 big chance, and also created 2 chances for his teammates. That the goal attempts is more than any other defender across the team. And he's also had 162 passes so far, which is the second most across the entire Wolves team. So he's hugely involved. If the clean sheets come and the attacking threat comes to something, he is going to get some epic scores over the next few weeks. And you can see the clean sheets there in the fixtures that they have. And you can see attacking potential there from him too.
Lars, the next team on the fixture difficulty ranking are Arsenal. Again, we've been talking about them for weeks, but Norwich and Burnley are the next two before the North London derby. Then it's Brighton, Palace and Villa. Surely with Norwich up next and then Burnley, this has to be the time where their FPL assets come through.
Yeah, I'd like to stick up for Arsenal a little bit here. I think the Arsenal are rubbish thing has gone a bit too far. If you look at the bookies, like Arteta is a massive favourite to be the first manager to be sacked now by a big margin. And I don't know. I think if you obviously their first three games of the season were not good, but I want to defend them a little bit by saying, okay, you have an opening day game away to a team that's just been promoted, you know, first time with a full crowd in that new stadium, I believe it was as well. Huge atmosphere. It's possible for even a good team to mess up under those circumstances. And then you have to play Chelsea and City, two of the best teams in Europe, with a lot of first team players missing. No, these three defeats, there's okay, it doesn't look good, and it's the worst defense, the worst start to the season in so and so many years, and I accept that. I get they have like the highest XG against in the league so far and created the second least high XG. Okay, but I think if you look at the fixtures, you know, it can be explained and it can be sympathized with, I guess. And when you have this very good run of fixtures coming up, and quite a few of their players are price dropped, I think this is not a bad time to add some Arsenal to your dish. So, you know, 4-4 for Ben White. I think he's probably going to play every week, initially at least, no matter what happens, because the money they paid for him, if he's fit, he's going to be there. And I can see Arsenal keeping some clean sheets over this period. Martin Ødegaard at 5-5, probably going to play very regularly in a very advanced role. Not a huge sort of goal and assist muncher last season, but his underlying numbers are pretty good. He plays a lot of good passes forwards, plays a good number of passes into the box, all this sort of stuff. And if you're not sold on my compatriots, then, you know, Smith Rowe at 5-4 is also a very sort of cheap option, especially if you're for instance, if you're wildcarding and you're doing this Ferran Torres thing, and you're a little bit worried about the rotation and you want someone who isn't cheap but you're happy enough being first off your bench, like one of these cheap Arsenal midfielders could be a thing.
I really like Norwich though. Actually, I really like Norwich going to this weekend.
Spoken like a true Spurs fan.
Well, maybe, Tom. But actually, I look at Norwich in the opening three game weeks of the season. They've played against Liverpool, City and Leicester. Their underlying stats are not bad given the teams that they've played against. And don't you think that they're going to go into this weekend going, this is our perfect moment for us to get off the score sheet? The likes of Rashica, I can see us having a bit of a pookie party this weekend, because Arsenal are... Whether they've got good players or not, they are in a bad place right now. They've had a bad start to the season. They've lost a number of players through COVID and they do need a bounce back. But I think Norwich will equally see this as a good opportunity to start their season. So I'll be becking on a pookie party more than I am an Arsenal clean sheet.
I'm going to break with tradition here and agree with Lars. I've had Ben White in as a sleeper agent since game week one, knowing that he wasn't going to get a minute of action for me until this fixture. Arsenal defensively last season were very solid. Only City and Chelsea conceded fewer goals than they did over the whole campaign. And yeah, just to echo what Lars said, Emile Smith-Rowe, Bukayo Saka, Martin Ødegaard, all priced under 6.5 million and pretty much nailed on starters. So I think this should be the start of a little Arsenal revival.
Well, it's taken me this long, but I think I've finally got the panel to say some good things about Arsenal, which will appease our Arsenal fan listeners, that's for sure. Now, let's look a little bit further down the line then, because people have been talking for a little while about there being a bit of a fixture shift in game week 7. Sam, is that something that's on your radar?
Yeah, absolutely. So my original plan was fully to wildcard in game week 7. The fixture swing is huge for some of the big important clubs. So Tom's already mentioned Chelsea, and the fixture swing for them is really lovely in game week 7. But you also get really nice fixture shifts for the likes of Leeds too. And they are a team that most people haven't yet invested in, or invested in one player here or there just to start the season. So they could be really good. But at the same time, we get United and Liverpool and Man City, who all suddenly shift right down to the bottom of the fixture ticker. So game week 7 looks like the ideal moment for switching around your premiums, having a real think about whether you want Bruno and indeed Ronaldo at that point, and whether it's better to be invested in, say, players like Lukaku, maybe even Son at Spurs or Kane, although their fixture swing really comes into its own in game week 13.
So plenty to think about in the longer term, but plenty to think about for this week as well. Next up, let's take a look at your responses to our Twitter question. Yes, this week we asked you who the best captain for game week 4 is. Remember, each week we pose you a question on @officialFPL, so make sure you hit the follow button to ensure you don't miss out on your chance to reply. Now, there were some brilliant responses to this, really varied. United Yam said Cristiano Ronaldo, the last home game he played versus Newcastle, he got a hat-trick. Tom, is it written in the stars? Would you be bold enough to go Ronaldo?
My sort of
It was 10 years ago.
My current plan. My
More
current
than that.
Plan is.
You're captaining Jimmy Greaves.
My current plan is to captain Ronaldo, but I feel like the sensible captaincy option is probably still Mo Salah, just because there are those question marks about whether or not Ronaldo's going to start, if he does start, how he fits into the team, how quickly his new teammates are able to adapt to him being there. So Salah's probably the more sensible one, but I may just, you know, go all guns blazing and stick on Ronaldo.
Don't let Lars hear you say that again. Now, of course, not everyone has Ronaldo, including Lars. And our next tweet is from someone who doesn't. Maiko says, like you, between Salah and Son. He says, Leeds have Llorente back in their defence, so they might be better. And Crystal Palace ship goals for fun. Southampton have a strong defence, so I won't captain Antonio. Meanwhile, I don't have Ronaldo, so it is a no question. I really like Maiko's reasoning there.
He's shown he's working, hasn't he?
He has, and we like that here on the podcast. Ian agrees with the Mo Salah shout. He says, without a doubt, King Mo. Lars, I'm guessing you're going to agree with this, especially as you definitely don't agree with the Ronaldo shout.
Yeah, well, I'm not actually as strident about it.
Oh, he's wavering. Look, he's wavering. He's wavering.
Oh, look at this. Backing down now.
I'm not backing down. I'm just acknowledging for the benefit of our listeners, we don't want to lead them astray. This is me sort of following my gut rather than the logic and going slightly straight. I get that. No, basically, I can answer this very quickly. Everything Tom said about Salah is what I think about it, and I'm going to captain him.
Finishing top says, surely it's Son. We all know what happened last season when he was supposed to have an injury. Sam, are you going to be bold enough to captain him?
The only thing that puts me off captaining Son apart from the injury is it's the early kickoff on a Saturday, and I hate captaining an early kickoff player just because it ruins your weekend if they blank. But I do think that Spurs have potentially got the best fixture to bank on for a captaincy this weekend against a Crystal Palace defence that haven't started the best ever. I mean, I actually think the Crystal Palace will be all right this season. They've made some really good signings, but they're going to take time to gel and to bed in. I think Spurs could do really well. I really like Antonio as a pick. I think he could be the best captaincy pick again this week. 3 double-digit hauls to start the season. I am really tempted to give it to Antonio.
Well, I'm saying wow, as if Mikel Antonio isn't a viable captaincy option. He proved in the last game, week 3, that he was, getting 11 points. If you captained him, you got 22. Some people, Sam and myself, missed that boat. Although, Sam, you did get Son. I captained Bruno. Let's not talk about that. Tom and Lars proving that he is a good captaincy option. But there's another differential that Dave has tweeted us about. He said, what do we think about Pogba as a differential captain pick to the obvious ones instead of Salah, Ronaldo, Lukaku or Antonio? I love a differential, but I don't know if I would be bold enough. What about you, Tom?
I think Pogba could be one of the main beneficiaries of Ronaldo's arrival, particularly if he carries on playing in this left-sided role where he's been basically deputising for Marcus Rashford. If you think back to the relationship that Pogba struck up with Zlatan Ibrahimovic when he was in the team, those two developed an understanding really quickly. And I think Ronaldo's going to fulfil a similar function for United. And I can see him really thriving on the sort of inventive passes that Pogba will be putting into the box. Not just crosses, but, you know, raking balls from deep, little scooped passes, things like that. So I think as long as Pogba is starting, I don't think he's a bad shout as a left field captain pick.
Well, thank you for all of your replies on Twitter this week. Some real variety in the responses as well too. And I always enjoy a game week when the captaincies are spread out more because it means we get more of a variety in terms of points. You can make up some real ground on your mini leagues with a good captaincy pick. Now, let's see who our panel are giving the armband to, as well as any other changes they've made. So come then, Lars, you've talked the talk, but can you walk the walk? What are you doing with your team?
Yeah, well, I think I've said it 3 times in the pod. Like, I'm captaining Salah for sure.
What about your transfers?
Yeah, so this is the thing. Everything hinges on the Bruno on the Lukaku injury update, and we're gonna have to try to wait that one out as long as I can. Because what I want to do is turn Bruno Fernandes and Ivan Toney into Lukaku and Ferran Torres. That's something I would feel very good about. But if Lukaku is injured for this week, of course, then that would be a silly thing to do, and I'll have to, you know, completely rearrange my plans. But I'm crossing my fingers for good news on Lukaku and hoping that I can make that double swap.
And Tom, what about you? What moves are you going to be pondering over on your big birthday? Big birthday makes it sound like you're celebrating a huge old age. Just to clarify, I don't know what age Tom is celebrating.
I can confirm it is an old age, as they all have been in recent years, but it's not a particularly significant milestone. I'm planning to take a second consecutive 4-point hit, which, kids, is not something you should be trying to do, but it's the only way I can get Ronaldo into my team. And as discussed, I am fully on the Ronaldo hype train. My plan is to do Bruno Fernandes and Danny Ings out, Demaré Gray and Cristiano Ronaldo in. I really like the look of Demaré Gray. I think he's been a bargain both in real life for Everton and at 5.6 FPL million. He's a bargain in FPL as well. And also, like, from a psychological perspective, Sam was saying before how she doesn't like captaining someone in the Saturday lunchtime kickoff, because if it doesn't work out, then your weekend's already spoiled. Everton are at home to Burnley on Monday night, and having a player in that Monday game is just a way of just prolonging the FPL pleasure a little bit. So that's a minor factor in my decision to bring in Demaré Gray, but it's mainly due to the fact that he's made a fantastic start to the season, and Everton have got some nice looking games coming up in the next few weeks. Captaincy wise, when we started the pod, it was 100% Ronaldo, no doubts, you know, commit, be brave. And now it's maybe Ronaldo, maybe Salah, maybe Antonio.
I've led you astray on your birthday. Delighted.
This is what you're going to spend the rest of your birthday doing, isn't it? Sitting tinkering with your team, because Lars has got in your head, you've got in each other's head.
Lars is like the sort of like the kind of like the dark angel sitting on my shoulder, like whispering mischievous FPL advice, and I'm just not sure I'm going to be able to get it out of my head for the rest of the day.
Sam, what about you? You're not going to be spending your whole day tinkering with your team, but you are also going to be on the FPL show, which will be available on fantasy.premierleague.com as well, so we can get double FPL family on there. What are you thinking with your team, though?
So I'm a firm believer that the changes you make to your team should strengthen it, not weaken it, and therefore making changes at the weakest positions are the best ways to go, which means I am not going Ronaldo, because my weakest positions will not be strengthened by me bringing in Ronaldo. So I have a couple of flagged players. One of them is Son. I'm waiting for some press conference news on him. The other one, of course, Kelly, is Troy Deeney, who now I can't have play because he's left the league. So I
almost feel responsible for that.
Oh, well, it's my fault, really.
But not him leaving, I'd like to point out. I was not responsible for him leaving.
I really liked the Deeney pick at the beginning of the season, just because he was nice and cheap and you weren't really sure which Watford player was going to start. But of course, now that he's made the move to Birmingham, I can't play him in FPL anymore. So I do have a red flag in my team, and that's something that I do want to fix. So I think I'm going to be looking at going early on the Pookie party, because the Norwich fixtures are really nice over the next few weeks. And as I mentioned earlier, I can see Pookie doing well against Arsenal. Now, it would take a little bit of fun shifting around, because I've only got 0.4 in the bank, and Deeney's obviously taken a price drop down to 5.4. So I would need to make another transfer alongside it. But that's a transfer that's setting me up for the future. It will free up a little bit of money by downgrading a defender to do it, and that will put me in a better position in the week after to move for one of the forwards once I know which one of them it is I want, and once we've seen what happens with Bruno against Newcastle.
Some very good reasoning there. And that's where we'll end the pod this week, with some words of wisdom from Sam Bonfield. A very good luck to you all, Sam, Lee, and birthday boy Tom. Tom, what are you doing for the rest of the day?
Sitting here endlessly tossing a coin over my captaincy this weekend, pretty much. That'll be me. Into the wee small hours.
Will you enjoy that? Go wild with those transfers. Not too wild, though. That's all we've got time for this week. A reminder, given the fact we haven't had any Premier League action since the last podcast, you can still go back and listen to last week's episode to really help you get prepared for Game Week 4. There's also plenty of other FPL content on our website, fantasy.premierleague.com. So check that out. And as always, I'll be back with another FPL panel next Thursday. Until then, good luck, goodbye, and enjoy Ronnie's return.